Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. That's right. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and we are doing Fireside Chat with Matt Lee. And this week, we are on Control 13, Network Monitoring and Defense. Matt, welcome to the show.
Man, I tell you, these things are going by fast. They're going to have to invent new controls and new safeguards just so we can have something to talk about in Fireside Chat, right, Chris?
I was actually thinking, like, what framework would we... No, I'm not going.
Maybe there's another one we could even correlate to that has more expansiveness and different categorization.
You mean like NIST?
No, I was thinking Trustmark. Yeah.
Well, we could do.
I digress. Anyways.
I digress. Yeah, that's a good idea. Man, I can't believe I didn't think of that.
Yeah. No,
I think what I would propose doing the next time around is maybe talking about some of the domains that don't exist in NIST.
Ooh,
and the importance of those domains to the practice. So stay tuned. We might tackle governance, little g and big g, before we get through all 18 of CIS.
Fair enough. We may. But for now, we're back to 13. And Chris, to your point, in order to understand who Killer the Dog is, no, sorry, I might have made a reference there. No, in order to understand 13, one has to have a healthy 12. And you're actually going to see that 12 and 13 have this high amount of correlation, right, between each other as far as dependence, like what we're going to be doing, how we're going to be gathering it. The things we're talking about here are going to come into and feed some stuff that was given you in 12 that you weren't prepared for.
Sure.
Right? 12.2 says establish and maintain a secure network architecture. What is that?
Right.
We're going to see some of that in 13. I mean, in that it says, you know, address minimum, you know, segmentation and some other things, but ultimately, we're going to see some of those suggestions build upon 12 with 13, specifically 13.3 and 4 and a few others. But let's get into it, Chris. What would you like to say before we get started?
Well, I think before we get started, you know, you brought up the Trustmark, and I think it's important to say this. Like, there are no IG1 safeguards in this control. And from a capability standpoint, I think this kind of comes through two lenses. One is, okay, yeah, it may not be the easiest of the control domain controls to do. Obviously, it comes later in the set of 18. But one of the things that comes to mind for me is our world has shifted drastically post-COVID. The traditional network that we would monitor has changed dramatically as far as what is, quote, internal or the enterprise. And so I think it's important as we're going through this to maybe touch on that. Like, hey, this safeguard might not directly apply to you in the same way. And I love saying this to people that go, oh, it's such a legacy safeguard. I'm like, well, it might be a legacy safeguard,
yeah, it's
but
not.
How would you address it
if
we take that word legacy out? Assume it's not. Because we hear this all the time. My favorite one yet today is tied to the wireless network. Like, yeah, we don't have any wireless access points on our network. I'm like, until you do. What happens when that changes? What happens to your organization if that changes? What if it's not up to you to put that wireless access point in and now it's there? Do you just go with like, yeah, well, we don't have anything in place to handle this new change in our environment, and there's nothing we're going to do about it because that's just too hard.
Well, and I think, I mean, keeping it, you know, back to the point of not having IG1s, even then, to your point, when we start thinking about an IG2 group like this, and we start saying, okay, it's because we've built 1 through 18 in IG1, 1 through 12 in IG2, and now here we stand looking at an IG2. And also to your point of this, like the delineation of what is a network, right? When we start thinking about, you know, look at control 13.1, let's just start. Well, first, let's start where we are.
So yeah, let's start.
What's the overview of this safeguard? It is, or control family, it is to operate processes. And then you look at this, operate is called out.
Yeah,
and this gets me into a little bit of a diatribe, right? So strategy versus tactics versus operations. Strategy is what kind of war are we going to fight, right? Is that going to be a war of attrition, some type of strategic war where the strategy is going to be to take out their tactical capabilities and operational capabilities to deliver war without killing more humans, or XYZ? Tactics are going to be which hill which place supports that, which factory do I take out to take out the ore, which oil field, things to that nature, right? Of that. But operations are going to be like, who's the bloke driving the truck towards that hill? Like
Right.
that's operations. So when they look at this, operate processes, meaning you better be doing this. This needs to be operational and functional, and tooling to establish and maintain comprehensive network monitoring and defense against security threats across the enterprise's network infrastructure, comma space, and user base. And this is where that shift you're talking about becomes so poignant, in that if my user base has shifted outside of my castle and I haven't addressed that shift, then there are some core network decisions that also need to be made. Am I moving to SASE? Am I dealing with things with VPN? How am I going about this in that regard?
Well,
Anyways, go get off
let's
my
no, you're this is great
pulpit.
because I think this kind of goes into we were talking about, what's my capability, right? And I think most solution providers today probably aren't standing up a SOC in their own MSP. They
Yeah,
are
not likely.
probably contracting out to a third party. And
Sure.
you think about how that might work, and you're like, well, if I have a third party SOC and they're not in my quote local network, then that means that the things that they can monitor feasibly would be beyond what is the quote legacy four walls, because
Well,
that's
and you're
what
seeing
they
that,
are.
right? You're seeing that be in the, the, and I don't want to name any names, but the players that are monitoring Microsoft or identity extensibility and things. And I think, you and I have said this many times. I've been saying this for years, but, I think identity is the new edge. Identity is the new definition of security. But moreover, when we think about this shift, we're moving in my mind from this beeps and boops centric world of this went off and there's an anti-malware, there's a malware event, and to that's Matt's machine. Matt has this privilege and access. These are the things, and the identity becomes that extensibility, right? And I
Well,
think that's the biggest part we should
let's
focus
talk
on
about
is
that for a
that.
minute as we get into the safeguards. The first thing that popped into my head when I was going through this control is the responsibility matrix is drastically different than what it was in the quote legacy
Oh
space,
yeah. Especially the
where
shared responsibility matrix, right? That SRM
Exact shared
concept.
responsibility matrix. Where does, and especially in the MSP world, if we service clients, right? So like thinking about, I've got a SOC, and okay, so it's a third party vendor, and the SOC is monitoring not just me, but it monitors my client. And what does the, as we get into like this first one, event alerting 13.1 and
Yeah.
even 13.2, which is, host based intrusion detection, like what happens when these events occur? Who's getting notified? Is it me? Is it my, is it someone on my team? Like, there's so many things that popped into my
Oh.
head when I was going through this. So, like, yeah, walk me through. Let's start with 13.1.
Well, 13.1 is also, I want to solve and throw out maybe a little bit of a salacious point here with 13.1. A lot of people say 13.1 says I have to have a SIM. Right?
It
But it
doesn't
ends
quite
with, and I'll
say.
read this to you, centralized security event alerting across enterprise assets for log correlation and analysis. So we'll unpack that in a second. Best practice implementation requires the use of a SIM, comma space, which includes vendor dash defined event correlation alerts, period, space, a log analytics platform configured with security relevant correlation alerts also satisfies this safeguard, which means it's not just a SIM. You may not have to be able to search forever in history of a stored and ever-growing SIM that has constant capabilities of past data or those things. You may be able to subscribe to an MDR platform of extensibility that allows those data sets to be done through log analytics platform with security-related correlation alerts brought to that aspect.
You
So,
forgot one
yeah.
thing. You normally catch all the commas and spaces, but I'm going to say
Fair.
this. The first thing that it says is the statement that is this control, and it says
Yes.
centralized security event alerting. Centralized. Let's go back to privileged access management as an example. We don't say you must have one central repository
Yeah,
for
yeah, yeah. I
all
love to
of
repeat
your.
that. Yeah.
So I think it's important to look at that through the lens here too, because it does give you two examples of ways to satisfy this.
Yes.
And obviously it gives you a best practice. But I think it's important to say, like, but there are things that I may not be able to centralize into just one place. And I think that's really important, especially for MSPs dealing with lots of clients and lots of different environments, is like
Yep.
as best you can, right?
Yeah,
With
you might have three
yeah.
central places to be your central
Exactly.
locations. And I think to that extent, they've said that many times before. I love that you bring that back up, is it is really about if you're going to centralize, It doesn't all have to be in one place. What I will make an argument against, though, Chris, when it comes to security event alerting, I would make it an argument. It would be very hard to do an effective job of that without one core central point. And I'd
Agree.
also go far to say that when you're dealing with centralization of anti-malware, or centralization of identity, or centralization of access control, all of those have limitations that event and security event alerting
Yes.
do not, in the sense that event alerting actually can be sent to a common platform in all of those cases as the event, security event being alerted to. This
Right.
also could be your ticket system potentially when you get to that aspect of it. And I don't mean every event, now I mean incidents, but certainly at the event level, you could have a SOCAS, right? A SOC as a service, an MDR
Sure, but
platform
unpack
that
that a
is
little
willing to
bit.
absorb all of those
Because
things.
you just
Yes.
kind of described several different things. Like, I'll use this as an example. Think about an XDR vendor and their process. I mean, that in some respects is a centralized location for what is happening on endpoints, in most
Yep.
cases, endpoints. That
And
is a
network now
centralized,
growingly, right?
right?
You have syslog and other
But my
extensibilities.
point is
Yeah.
that's a centralized environment, and in a lot of
Yep.
cases, you see this a lot. That might be the extent of what they have in place. Now, is it best practice per the SIEM statement in this control? Probably not. But again, we're not looking for perfection the first time
Well,
you
and I
implement
want to
software.
clarify something I'd said so that I don't like make people throw rocks at me. I'm
Well,
not
it's really
saying your
hard. This is a
PSA can become your
podcast.
SIEM. I want to make sure that's not what's taken away from that. What I'm really saying is, let's say I'm hiring a schmack point and they're going to receive all of my endpoint related data, and I'm going to send them log analysis pieces that they'll pilfer through for the things that matter, and comma space, they are providing log correlation, comma space, and analysis, whether that be through human method measures, SIEM, or through log analytics platforms that are looking at these things for those patterns or TTPs or whatever it may be, IOCs to that nature. And so when we think about that, those type of companies in my mind could then send those tickets to your PSA, and the PSA becomes where something becomes risen to an incident or something that needs to be an event that needs to be managed, right? Whereas what they're doing in 11 and 13.1 is really just saying, bring all the stuff together, all these beeps and boops that go off,
Yeah.
so that somebody can go, that beep is Chris's machine, that beep is Chris. Chris now had an access to this platform. That beep now means that these combined beeps indicate we have an incident we need to deal with and we need
Well,
to take action upon.
so jumping into 13.2, deploy a host-based intrusion detection solution. I
Yep, good
think
old
about
HIDs.
yeah, so I think about the number of times that you've done forensics on an endpoint and you're looking at the event and alert log. Well, wait, there's an event alert log that's centralized for that host, right? Like that is a place that's going to have all of those things in it. And I think sometimes we forget that what are we doing with that information? Why is it important?
Yeah, back to
Send it somewhere
13.1,
else.
right, to your point. And what we're getting at when you're talking about, and I want to just clarify, 13.2, 13.3, HIDs, NIDs. Host-based intrusion detection solution, HIDs, HIDS, and network-based intrusion detection solution. What's the principal difference between that and the later ones? Well, HIDs can only detect and not do anything about it. It is not in a
Right.
position to take action, whereas HIPs and NIPs, which we'll get to later, are. But to your point, when 13.2 goes beep and says we found something, or 13.3 goes beep and says I found something, it has to go to 13.1 where something can correlate and analyze those beeps and boops. Back to the point of what is a HIDs or NIDs or HIPs and NIPs. Host-based intrusion says it's an agent on the host that's looking at things from the host context. Network-based intrusion are looking at the network side of it. Now, sometimes in a SASE world, back to your initial point, or in a world where I'm agent delivery of what is a network or as software-defined networking methodologies, then 13.2 and 13.3 might become together or might be married together in a solution where they're happening,
Yeah.
the network parts happening inside, let's say, Schmodel's network, and
Yeah.
the host-based stuff's happening on Schmodel's endpoint agent, right? And so you
Remember
see
when
this,
this used to be like crazy hard to do? Like, I mean, I
Oh,
think
yeah.
about the technology and the
This is all
tools.
packed into stuff now,
I
right?
mean,
You,
it's
yeah.
mind-boggling when you think about today. Like, there are tools and services out there that have made some of this that used to be like a, like, or even the response time has
Yeah.
shrunk dramatically as a result
Of
of the
course, time
ability
to
to
detect,
isolate.
right?
Yeah.
And now that you call this out, 13, 1, 2, and 3 are all detection capabilities. They're all
Correct.
trying to find when something went bad. Why do we care about that? Well, for all those people out there, if you can do simple math until NIST 2.0 breaks this,
Yeah.
I have identify, protect, that's 2. Detect, respond, recover, that's 3. That's 3/5 versus 2/5, which means that the 3/5 is more, which means more stuff that makes a difference in my outcome happens after the explosion. And so 13.1, 2, and 3 is saying, how do we detect this quicker? To your point, response times, more information, more contextual, more valuable to what its value is to the impact of this organization. And then we get into 13.4, which is, sounds simple, sounds like it should be already addressed, and is part of what would be ascribed in 12.2. But it says, not only do we have segmentation, now we're actually looking at what Chris's network segment's trying to do to poor old victim Matt's network segment, right? I'm painting you as the bad guy, Chris.
I have to say on this one, this is one that I've seen a lot in the years that I've done, you know, network assessments where I've looked for, you know, vulnerabilities, and it's looking at a VLAN segment, and you're like, this VLAN can talk to all the VLANs. Actually, the first three VLANs I looked at talked to all the VLANs.
Or they've done it back only at the layer 3 switch, so they any of their filtering can't happen because it's just actually making the router the layer 3, right?
That is a perfect example of it. And you're like, do you guys, I mean, I get that you understand how the topology works, but did you understand how the security
the intention part, of yes. this? And this is a protect safeguard, right? This is protect network. Why? Because if I land in this magic honeypot that is Chris's terrible security posture on his machine, I don't want that to necessarily pivot and permeate into other segments. And I want there to be capabilities of network intrusion detection between those two segments that say, hey, this Chris guy just got super shady all of a sudden. And we're seeing some traffic happen that says it's shady. Let's block that. And hopefully you limit my access and what I can do across those network segments so that I'm limited in what I can do.
To summarize, I think what you're talking about in the threat actor space is they've moved laterally.
Yes, thank you. I would want to limit lateral movement as That's a right. definition. Thank you. Yes. So 13.4 is saying filter between them, and that can get into your DLP. That can get into a lot of other things that you could now be filtering for between those, especially if you have packet inspection capabilities. All kinds of stuff that's really fancy at that level that can do kind of checking what's happening there. Right. 13.5, manage access control for remote assets. Like, hey, maybe manage access control for assets remotely connecting to the network. Determine the amount of access based on, hold on, guys and gals, up-to-date anti-malware software being installed. Configuration compliance with secure configuration process that does include not running a Plex server out of date on a home asset that you're connecting into my network that I doesn't have any malware, that's running Windows XP, right? Like I'm losing my crap here, but...
Did this actually happen? I think.
Oh, by this fake company called SchmastPass, right? That was out there, I've heard about. And so when you get into this, these are basic concepts. This is an IG2, but still it's saying if you're letting people touch your data, and this goes back to your point, Chris, it is NATA. What is a network? And I like to say what Phyllis Lee has said many years ago, which is your user's network, your company's network ends where your user's fingertips lands.
Yeah.
And that's the point here is when you're talking about that network, it now needs to include those other places where I'm at home. And that means that as I'm getting into access data, that means I'm coming in remote as a remote access. And therefore I need to look at these things like, do I have any malware? Am I encrypted? Do I have my OS up to date? Am I meeting compliance policies? Those things that are mattering. And you can see that to your point earlier, these things never existed before. I had to buy a separate tool to this from Duo for device health. I can do this with Microsoft Conditional Access now for a lot of things. Yeah, anyways.
So before we move into the next group of safeguards, which are now would be the IG3s, I think it's really interesting to look at where we've gotten to, and 13.5 kind of highlights some of that when we talk about remote control for remote or managed access control. Access control, where have we heard that before?
We heard it at the end of 3, right?
Mm-hmm. And then we heard it again in 5 and 6.
And I'm glad you brought this up. This is a new type of access control being brought
exactly
up. Can you name what it is? Because we've done our back. And we've gone down that path. What would this be? It starts with an A and ends with back. ABAC. What is ABAC?
ARP?
Nope. It is attribute-based asset control. And the point is that we're now starting to say, what's some of those attributes? Access like, is anti-malware up to date? Is configuration compliance held? Sure. Is this in its configuration process? Does it have an insured operating system up to date? Those are all parameters or attributes that then now when I'm doing access control, I'm saying, yeah, that's Chris. And yes, he's coming in from a company device, fine. But is it healthy? Those are attributes, right? Well, and company device attributes.
Just think about taking that a little bit further. Remember when detecting an asset could identify things like, ooh, that's coming from a Chrome browser, period.
Yeah.
Today it can identify that it's Edge or Chrome or fill in the
one blank. Can identify.
Right.
Right. And to your point, it can usually only see user agent string in context. But when you add in an agent, or when you're adding in these type of capabilities of saying,
Especially if they're
hey,
authenticated.
yeah, totally. Well, think about where this would be applied in a VPN land. You in the past would have used like a Shmuo agent, like this fictitious company, Shmuo, and that Shmuo agent would have then done some health attribution as part of its authentication
Because it's
flow, but
essentially
really
like
also
scanning
authorization.
for does it meet the requirements before we move on? And I think this is really important because I think, to some extent, we can see how this safeguard actually could have lived elsewhere, right? Like
It could have.
it's not that it, but it should live here. Like
But it
I'm
needed
certain.
maturity first. You
Yes.
needed 4.1 and 4.x. You
A
needed
hundred percent.
12.1 and 12.x. You needed 10.x as the 1.1s. And so, yeah, good call
But
out.
one of the things that I think we should highlight as we move into the next safeguard is that we go into like, well, this one specifically is it uses the word logs. And I think that's an interesting statement because we've been here
Like,
before.
whoa, isn't that 8.9? Isn't that
And
8?
I think it's important to see this here again because it goes back to what we were just talking about in 13.5 when it talks about like ensuring that things are up to date, ensuring that things are compliant. That's one of the great values of collecting logs is you can start seeing some of that data flow in and tell you things that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise know if you're not collecting that information.
Yeah, and hopefully in more near real time. And when network traffic flow, when we're talking about traffic flow, we're really talking about established, because you're getting into 13.6 collect network traffic flow logs. It's really talking about establishing connections and destruction of connections and what flowed there overall, right? And so net flow or network flow logs are really more net flow session states that talk about what did Matt and Chris do as computers as they talk to each other,
Yeah,
right?
what
And
was
where did
being
they
passed
go? And
back
to
and
your
forth?
point, more data. So we're in
Go to
detection again.
command line and just export my entire, C colon slash to some different
No, I
location.
need net flow, so I want
No.
session states
Session
in the
states.
moment. And that is the point to call out, actually. Detection of network traffic flow logs. Traffic flow logs are different than traditional other logs in the sense that they are moment of state type information. Like, what did Matt do and when with these flows? Like, what data went where? How did it go? Who did he communicate with? Those kind of things. And I don't want to miss this jump from, network traffic flow is a detection. Right, and it's meant again. We were surrounded by these detections, then protection, now detection again, and that's because we're looking at logs to your point and trying to figure out what's going on, whether that be during the moment of battle or posthumously, to your point,
Sure.
right? And sometimes prehumously and pre-battle of is it configured right? Is it up to those content? And look back at 13.5. 13.5 is a pre-battle. Because it's saying, let's look at this and see if anti-malware's in there before I let Chris connect to the VPN. That's pre-battle, that's protection, right? Again, HIPS, and then now we're at HIPS and NIPS, which are not only should you be able to detect crap when it's flowing between those networks, but now you should be able to stop it. You should be able to actually do something like an EDR or an IPS-based agent on some device that says, now Chris did bad stuff, let's stop Chris from communicating from the
Well, you
world.
keep using these, you keep saying acronyms as words, and I know we're going to start getting bleeped because
Yes,
we're
true.
getting into explicit content. So, we
HIPS and
have
NIPS,
like five safeguards to
host-based
cover.
intrusion prevention and network-based intrusion prevention.
Yes.
Sorry.
Talk to me about that because we had the one a
It
one detect
is.
in the middle of a lot of protect, so HIDs
Yeah.
and HIPs and NIPs.
Basically, what they're doing, if you look at this in escalation, it probably is a legacy of price-based discussion. And what I
Sure.
mean by that is, if you get to HIPS, and remember when you used to have IDS type solutions in a firewall, but then you could pay for IPS solutions that were on top of IDS that actually
And did
did
they
something
sit in
about it?
front of your firewall or behind your
They were
firewall?
part of it in the way. But the point being is, like, when you had to pay for those extra things, those were why you had a classification. And you'll see these are IG3s versus IG2s. So I believe that HIPS and HIDs would not be separable. When I teach my class on this, I don't separate HIPS and HIDs
You
at
don't
this
even see
point.
that really anymore in firewalls that are out there of having it, one versus the other.
Nope.
You could
Nope.
turn
You
one
just see them
off.
together. So that's my argument. And what's really
Okay.
neat about 13.8, I want to read into this though, because 13.7 gives the example implementations include EDR. Great.
Right.
Okay, good. But the next one says example implementations include a CSP service or a cloud service of sorts.
Right.
And so you're starting to get into this understanding of the belief in a SASE solution that solves
a network that goes beyond the legacy.
Yes. Office. Yes. That is. And to your point, this is almost, Johnny, foreshadowing where we sit today from when our forefathers many moons ago, like 4 years ago, wrote this document.
They didn't have wireless because there was no getting through the walls.
Okay. So we're through the hips, nits, hids, nids. Aspect. So that gets us through 13.8. 13.9 is interesting because it says deploy port level access control. So it's another type of access or another access control applied at a different level. Now saying, and this brings us back to that traditional network, but could be redefined, right?
We saw this before, right? Remember when we had the examples around wireless with regards to
802.1x and WPA2 in our earlier days? Yes. Yes.
They blended two together. That was like, wait a second. We're talking about wireless. There's a little bit of confusion here. And I think there's a clarification, even though it's unintentional.
There's less delineation here. And what I mean by this is what we're talking about now in the IEEE infrastructure, identify, authenticate, authorization, and auditing. Now we're actually talking about the authorize in that second piece, as well as identify and authenticate mixed together. So to
if
your
I
point,
was to go back in time, Matt, I would argue control time. I would say that if you added the language that's in this particular control where it says or similar access control protocols and may incorporate user and or device authentication is actually what would have been nice to see in a previous control domain that had similar language.
You're not wrong, like in 12 and in 5, extensibilities. Yes.
Thank you.
Agreed. But so port level is just saying when I plug into the hole, does it give me an access right away or do I have to authenticate and say who I am first? And these are things coming down to zero trust, right? We're starting to get into these zero trust principles being applied at this level. What's unfortunate about this is the port level access control assumes that I've got a physical location and a physical switch and a physical network.
And even if you didn't, let's look at these through a different lens. I think there's also, to your point earlier, about the cost factor that's in here. Like there's a lot of network infrastructure out there that's still current infrastructure that does not support everything that's listed out here.
Yeah, I might have to do radius as an extensibility model or something of that nature.
And we're adding complexities in that. I've seen this in environments where they're like, I don't want to go out and buy all new switches. So what we did is we locked the server room. And if you plug into the patch, the port on the wall, you don't get anything because the physical connectedness in the server room has been pulled out of the switch.
Yeah. And I think to your point, when we're looking at things of be where you are and start where you are, that's a start.
Exactly.
The challenge is the intention of this is the change in identity. Because
agreed.
Now I could just change that cord to another device that's already been plugged in. But to your point,
well,
it's
not
a step,
if it's physically
right?
disconnected. But yes. Okay. So to your point, and this gets into a lot of things that we don't necessarily have control over today.
It's a difference of zero trust and then trust but verify.
Right.
Right. And that is the shift here.
Is this not a maturity process? If we said you can get these right, all of them, all at once, the time you go through this.
Slap me if I ever say that. Please let me know if this is you. 100%. Yeah,
okay.
You know you're not Matt. This is a deep fake. Right. Deep fake, Matt, if you're saying those things. Yeah,
that's
100%.
That's like all.
Basically 13.9, if you took it into that broader context, it really is identify your user before giving them access to the network. And when you think about SASE, they already kind of do that this way, right? You already have to identify before being able to sign into the SASE network. And that is a form of this. So I just wanted to codify that port level could be shifted in its definition today. It means traditional port, like you said, in that way. And me authenticating as a device, whether it be through certificates or other methodologies, to validate that I'm me before
agreed.
I'm even
this,
able to access
the
network.
This is a maturity, again, a maturity thing. Like, so even in the, if you go outside of what we're talking about in the physical office, like think SASE, like, think about early on in the detection process, you could say, hey, if your IP addresses are coming from the following locations, in some respects, that's similar to saying, hey, we're unplugging the patch cable from the switch so that.
Yeah, like prior to a SASE type model. Yeah. Sure. You could see things like that. Those are steps in that layer.
Those areas
that.
From a technology standpoint.
I don't think it meets it fully, but it meets it in the way we're trying to apply a trust mark. Right. It meets it in that statement of can you get better? Do you know the problem? Are you working on the problem?
You have to start somewhere. Technology didn't already always support this when SASE applications came out. We're seeing that evolve. And I think that's what are you doing today?
SaaS versus SASE. I think you and I are getting confused.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
SaaS, I mean, software as a service, but SASE, I mean, secure access service edge. And
Oh,
there I'm
gotcha.
meaning when I VPN or TLS methodologies into that secure access service edge, that's my new network. And
Yeah,
those
you're
are
saying
examples
sassy
there.
with an
Yeah,
E,
so
not a
I
Y.
am. I am. Sorry about that. I'm glad we said
That's
that.
okay.
So we clarified for our audience.
Clarification here. Matt has a
So
lot of
all
sass.
of the sassy references Matt's making are not about being super sassy. They're
That's
about
right.
talking about
That's
secure
right.
access service edges.
Comes with a little sizzle.
But the next piece is 1310, perform application layer filtering, like actually do application firewalls and application gateways. And when you think about this, this is interesting. If you looked at 1310 in the cloud companion guide, which there's a CIS cloud companion guide you should be
Yeah,
familiar with.
It's actually a very good companion guide.
It starts
a lot of
saying
context.
That when you're talking about application layer filtering, as an MSP that is hosting your own RMM, there's an advocation that you should be doing WAFs. Or
Right.
web app or wireless web application
or WAFs.
Firewalls, right? And the ability to protect against those firewalls for application layer service. Thanks, my dog
Yeah.
agrees. She just said so. I just heard her.
I think that's
yeah.
truth.
It's truth, right? Preaching here. But application layer filtering and having that ability between segments, external applications, external applications.
Yeah.
1310 is an IG3 for a reason because it's deep and it does
Yeah.
require a lot of configuration. Like, if you have a website and you don't have a WAF in front of it, it's configured to block common WordPress attacks, you're failing here in 1310. That's what it's intended for, is those
We saw
types
a
of
lot of this.
conversations.
We saw a lot of this with application as a service, right? Where you're like, oh no, I got this account, I log in and I can do these things and it's just simple and easy, right? Like, and you're like, well, how is it being protected? Like, oh no, it's handled by fill in the blank, you know, blank Booble or whatever vendor it was, and you don't have to do anything with it, right? Like, but that's not how it, like, I digress. I mean, okay, we could go down a rabbit hole with this one. So we have one safeguard left. This is the one that I think is perhaps one of the biggest stumbling blocks.
But it's also probably one where when you're paying a SOCAS provider
okay.
or an MDR, they're getting
yep.
paid to do this for you. I think you're right. It's hard to do on your own.
So, and in fairness, I think there are things that if you implement them and don't tune immediately, the thresholds for tuning is going to get a sprawl that makes
yeah.
it very difficult to rein back in.
Yeah. What we're getting at here is 1311 says tune security event alerting thresholds. This is what's called establishing a clipping level.
This
right?
might be the shortest safeguard there is. In
it
the
is.
Entire,
and they really
framework.
Should be more. Damn it.
Right.
This is too short. What we're really getting to is establishing what's called a clipping level. And a clipping level says, okay, if Matt Lee wakes up and types in his password wrong three times before he gets it right the fourth time every day, then why would we alert when it's that second time typed in wrong as somebody attacking his machine? Perhaps it might make more sense to set the alerting level to when Matt has reached that fourth time that is congruent with his day-to-day activities. Now, I'm not getting that granular on all of these things.
Yeah, and I would argue there's a different problem with that particular example, but yes, I get your point.
True story. It's probably the efficacy challenge of my password
right.
typing. But the second point being, you know, you have to set clipping levels or else you're wasting your time on superfluous crap. And in the same breath, if you ignore so many things that you write off as superfluous, you miss the things that were actually real in that event. And so it's all about the fine sweet spot of where is the, this is just noise to holy shit, this is something, and that level where that happens.
Well, and you're using the clipping from an audio analogy for those.
No,
of
no,
you.
No. It's a term from the ISC squared material
okay.
that is talking about clipping levels.
Because
well,
then
this
you
exact
gave me
context.
The audio, the
yeah.
noise, and I'm like, oh, clipping noise. Okay. So
yeah,
like, let's
same
follow,
way too, though. Same
let's,
concept.
Let's
yeah.
follow audio for a second. Cause if I was thinking about running sound and I think about like, this is where you're, when you talk about tuning, we're talking about putting gates and compression on here, right? So that it doesn't, so that we don't have to hear noise, so that we don't have to have the distortion that would come from.
But what was noise and what was that artist's really cool waspy voice in the bottom?
Okay.
Really,
okay.
Right? That's
Fair.
Genuinely the challenge of this.
Yes.
And I think that's where the balance of this is really hard because you're trying to make that perfect spot where you're capturing just the audio subject you want.
Right.
But also clipping out the crap that's just going to annoy your people
With
to
the
patron
train
fatigue.
In the background.
So well, and pager fatigue.
Yes.
Right. That's the real challenge here. 20 alerts that Matt's have been
yeah.
compromised to the one that really was real. It's Boy Who Cried Wolf and pager.
Yeah, we
fatigue.
Saw that with like yeah. the you know Duo push
mm-hmm.
the button overload, like keep sending it until finally you say yes. So I think along those lines, it's something interesting that comes to mind.
And a clipping level on this would say after number 7, you
yeah.
just turn off the user. They're being attacked.
Right.
Those are clipping levels, right?
So I started point. Thinking about that and I'm like, well, this kind of gets into policy, process, and procedure around
doesn't
this
it though?
Because I think there's
and feedback loops, engineering level feedback loops of am I right?
And to your point about the, you know, the fourth or fifth time with Matt Lee, you know, having trouble with his password, do we get into sanctions? Like, do we just say, look,
true this story,
is,
maybe,
this is
perhaps.
Matt Lee, and we need to put a sanction on that because every time he does this, he's potentially putting in, I digress. But, like, you get the idea here. Like, as we've gone through this, one of the things that we really haven't highlighted or talked about is the importance of the policy, the process, and people even that make this work. Like, you don't just tune an alert just because you're
not like, bro, hit that auto tune button, right?
Right.
This isn't how this works. Like,
right. Like, hey, we're pitch correcting here.
We're not ACON here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt, we have butchered completely. I think this was a great conversation around this control. I think a lot of people struggle with this and shouldn't. I think the areas that make a lot of things what we would say is IG3 from a complexity standpoint are actually IG3 because of the cost prohibitiveness of them, at least in the previous. You know, we've evolved a long ways in the last few years from technology costs coming down in some respects.
True.
So that some of these that are in here that.
And complexities are normalizing, right? Think about it. And we both have to go, but think about how much you're seeing the same type of SaaS software. You're seeing the same type of network access, the same identity providers. You're seeing a normalization that's making scale. And I guess my big takeaway of 13 is most of 13 is something you partner with someone for.
Absolutely. I was going to say the same thing. If you haven't partnered with somebody and you are struggling with this control, that's because you have not partnered with somebody.
Yeah, that's fair. Or if you think you're doing well at this one, you might be up for an episode of like hell, of what is it, the bar rescue or whatever.
Yes, I would say go back in time and start again. I would argue that if you are doing well with controls 1 through 6, potentially 1 through 7 in CIS, then you have a great foundation in place.
Yeah, that's fair.
These controls should not be complicated to process, even though they may be complicated from a, I just can't do this. I don't have the money. Oh, wait, because you haven't partnered with somebody to help you pull this off.
Amen. Well, that's a great way to close it.
Peace out. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week.